These gentlemen would like to wrap up as quickly as possible tonight so they can get a little bit of rest before they have to come back in for that maneuver, and I'm sure some of you might like to do the same. So we'll just start off then with a summary of what's happened on the shift and open it up to your questions.
Well, our shift started right after the TV activity here, excuse me, earlier this afternoon. We had a fairly calm time there with the crew essentially resting up until the time when we executed the mid-course four correction. And you're probably aware that was about a 2 foot per second burn made with the RCS under the primary guidance and navigation system control. It was about a 12 second burn. That occurred around 61 hours. There was about an hour or so of activity there just prior to that where we updated the spacecraft pads and the computing system and so forth. Got a crew status. Essentially, they're all in feeling well. They've had various amounts of rest in relatively brief cycles, and Dr. Siegelsmith will tell you a little bit more about that later. We ran through an exercise we call the redundant components check. As you're probably aware, we don't even use all of the systems that we have on the spacecraft. We have some redundant components, some backup systems that we have not had to use yet, fortunately. And we wanted to exercise those right after we left the Earth, and again just before going into lunar orbit. And so we went over that redundant systems check around 61, 62 hours, and all those systems checks worked out very nicely. And right now we are very happy with all the spacecraft systems. Of course, we're going to continue to look at these all the way up until the formal go is given, which is around 68 hours. But as far as we know now, everything is really perking along very nicely. It's a true compliment to all the people that sweated over building the spacecraft and putting it together and getting all of the systems integrations and all those things. Some of the things that you might be interested in, the LOI maneuver is set up now for 69.0805 ground elapsed time, and I think that comes out very close to 4 o'clock in the morning. It's around a 29.90 delta V, and if y'all have been following the flight plan, as y'all have referred to in our previous discussions, I think the flight plan says it's 29.91, so we are obviously pretty close to the operational trajectory that was predicted some several weeks ago. It'll be about a 4 minute burn, put us into a 169.3 by 60 mile orbit, and then a couple of revs later, 4 hours later, we'll make another maneuver that'll put us into a 60 circular. Right now, the trajectory that we are on, at last reckoning, it was just a little over 60 nautical miles for the Paracynthian, about 60.5. And as we continue to track after that mid-course four maneuver, we continue to refine that, and it's coming in a direction which puts it closer to the 60 nautical miles that we were targeting for. We have, earlier in the flight, we talked a little bit about how we'd use some extra RCS fuel. We have some 1,200 pounds on board, and we've got at one time about 100 pounds behind the flight plan, and it was basically due to the extra maneuver that we put in trying to get away from the S-4B early in the flight, and also a maneuver there, the control and some of the ullage maneuvers and nulling out of the big SPS burn, not the big, the SPS burn that we made. So we have now done actually slightly better than the flight plan indicated on as far as the passive thermal control is concerned, and somewhat better as far as the nav sightings are concerned. Plus, you're aware that we've skipped two of the mid-courses. We weren't required to do them, and we actually only had to do a 2 foot per second mid-course here for number four. So all of these things have essentially got us back into not up to the exact flight plan yet, but we're in a real favorable position. In fact, we can, if necessary, use about 30% of our onboard fuel total quantity that we started off with just to do the lunar orbit operations. And this figures out to roughly about 300 or 400 pounds as opposed to the 100 pounds that was in the flight plan for that. We still think 100 pounds will do it, but if it doesn't, and we have to hold attitude longer or maneuver faster, we have, the message I'm trying to get across is that we have essentially a lot of RCS fuel to play with in the lunar orbit. We feel pretty confident about what it's going to take to get us home, that the pre-flight predictions of the passive thermal control, the nav sightings, and those things are going to be as we expected. So the amount that we had budgeted for that looks like it's going to be just about the amount that that we will actually be saving now to go back home. The window situation, and if you're interested in that, the last report from the crew was that, as you probably are already aware, the center window is still fogged up. The two windows, the rendezvous windows, are essentially okay, and the other two windows have some haze on them. The one on the left side is a little bit better than the one on the right side, which unfortunately is the one we plan to take the pictures out of. So Bill Anders' estimate of all that was that he really still felt like he would have to wait until he got to the lunar surface to actually see what kind of problems he was going to have. We've reviewed the effect of all of this on the flight plan and the attitudes, and have several options lined up. And we discussed this with Frank, and I believe you probably copied that on the outer ground loop. But we're standing by with we hope, the answers to a series of possible questions that he has. And he's going to essentially decide in real time what he might do about changing this around. The two basic options, one is that they can roll 180 and use the telescope and the optical system to do the landmark familiarization in the second rev. And another option is that Lovell can change seats with Anders and look out one of the good windows that's on that side. So the rest of the revs should not be greatly affected, since they plan to use the scanning telescope and the optical system during those landmark sightings anyway. And I believe that just about gets us brought up to date. The last little hack I had, we had increased our speed somewhat, a couple of hundred feet a second while I was on shift. We were doing a little over 4,000 feet a second towards the moon. We were around 13,700 miles away and about 191,000 away from the Earth, and it's all downhill to the moon from where we are now.
John, you want to give us a brief status on the crew at this point?
Certainly. Okay, we at 61 hours, 11 minutes into the flight of Apollo 8, we received a crew status report from Colonel Borman, and at that time, he told us that the crew had eaten two meals thus far today, meals A and B of day three, all except for some of the hard bites, which he related that no one liked particularly. The pudding was reported as outstanding, and the personal radiation dosimeters were swapped per our request. And the readouts were given. The commander to date has 70 REM, or RADs if you wish, and the lunar module pilot has 800 RADs, 800 millirads, correction on both of those, 800 millirads and 70 millirads on the commander. This was as of 61 hours GET. The water consumption was reported. The commander had 25 ounces. This is the potable water that's excluding that used for food rehydration. The sleep, the commander and the command module pilot reported having 2 hours of sleep at the present time, but plans were made for having more at a later time. The other thing I'd like to state is that we've had a healthy crew today. There's no new symptoms. Everybody is in good spirits. We were go for LOI throughout our shift, and while the next team is going to make the final decision, I see no reason why the crew should not do the LOI burn from a medical point of view. So everything is real good there, and we're very happy.
Okay, before we start the questions, I'd like to introduce these gentlemen for those of you who may be with us the first time. Right, this is Milton Windler, our flight director, and Dr. John Ziegelschmid, flight surgeon. And I'd like to start, if anyone has a deadline to meet, we'd like to take those first. Okay, let's get this one in the back. Could you wait for the mic to get to you, please?
Can you tell us in miles per hour how fast the Apollo 8 will be going just before LOI, how much in miles per hour it will be slowed down by the SPS, and how fast it will be going in MPH when it goes into LOI?
No.
Give me a minute, I think.
All right, there's a handy-dandy man with those kind of numbers. I'm sorry. In fact, I really can't even tell you in feet per second, but we never think in terms of miles an hour, but he'll work all that out for us here.
Let's come up here and take this one, John.
Do the rough figures still hold? It was 3,600 going into LOI and a 2,000 FPS drop. Are we in that same
ballpark? Yeah, we're right on the predicted. I think I mentioned to you that our delta V is within 1 foot per second out of 29,900. 29.90 with a pre-flight estimate.
29.90.
Yeah, I think that's what I said. Yeah. 29.90 is the feet per second is the delta V of that maneuver, and the OT, the operational trajectory in your flight plan, I believe, has 29.91. Is that not right? That's not velocity. That's a delta V of a burn. So your question was about the velocity, and I say that this tells me that the numbers that you had before the mission are essentially right.
Doug, I've got a couple more questions, but Tom's on deadline. Why don't you take him first?
Okay, yeah, let's get this one up here, and then we'll come back to those of you who...
Today's picture, the TV picture of the Earth, does anybody yet know where the North Pole was?
I think I do.
Where's that?
8 o'clock? Essentially, the top of the... Well, just a minute.
I'll draw it on the blackboard here. Now let's shove this out a little bit.
Oh, well, because it didn't rot. Oh, wait, this is a better picture than I'll be able to do.
You got enough light there?
You're right, I should use the other.
It's south.
If you'll go back and look at your picture, I think you'll find a very pronounced south polar ice cap. If you'll recall, we took the picture when the spacecraft was right over Central America, South America, and so forth, and the Terminator was over Europe. It was in the evening, nighttime was in Europe. It probably was, Europe. It was, to the west side. And that was the real clue, which way was up. And north was up here. I probably got it shifted too much around on the screen. I really think it was probably more like this, but when you go back and look at the picture again, essentially the top of the camera was up here, the way I saw it. But in any event,
The spacecraft, the Earth looked like a half a bowl this way.
That's right.
Now, in the screen, that's what we want to know. As the people saw it on the screen, that's not what the people saw on the screen.
That's what I saw.
Well, the Terminator, it was a half a bowl. Not
the Terminator was on the top of it. That's the Terminator right there, and this is where the circle, I was trying to draw a circle here. Maybe I need to draw a better picture. Was my picture twisted different from yours? Because that's entirely possible. I don't know. But what I saw on the screen in the Mission Control Center.
I understood it was at the left hand 7:30 position. What did you have to...
The Terminator, excuse me, I don't know how to work this. Okay, the Terminator was across the top, and this was all dark, and usually we couldn't see that. And I'm trying to draw kind of a line through the North and South Pole, and the spacecraft was actually located directly above South America.
And of course, you can only see 180 degrees, and if 90 degrees on the Earth, Baja California, somewhere over here. Now, I had a hard time picking it out.
That's not what we saw here. What we saw here was a little bit like that thing over there. It wasn't quite like that. It was sort of a little more bowl shaped this way.
Well, isn't that what I'm trying to draw? I'm saying that you didn't see this.
The Terminator was
Why don't we wait for the printer?
You're saying the Terminator was like this?
Yeah, right. That's what we saw. And if it was if it was that way, where was the North Pole?
Good grief. Down here, then. The Terminator was in Europe.
North Pole was down at 8 o'clock, the way Haney said it was?
If that's the way you saw it.
That's the way we saw it.
Yeah, if that's the way you saw it. But the Terminator was is over, essentially over Europe, over the Atlantic. So you can tell from there. And you'll remember that the fullest part of the Earth in the wintertime is in the southern hemisphere. And you could, if you look at it, I believe you'll notice a pronounced, very even-looking area that looks like the polar ice cap. Now, that's the way I saw it. It looks like that we have 50 different views of it, but I looked at it for quite a while, and I'm sure you did too. And maybe the way that's presented in the control center twisted it around over the... maybe the stations actually had it vertical then. Well, you've got me there. I haven't seen it. If somebody could bring over one, I could use that and tell you where I think the North Pole was.
We'll see if we can get a print over. That might help.
I just have one other question. I was wondering for Dr. Ziegelschmidt. Doctor, since the crew seemed a little chipper, a little more chipper today, a little more lively, a little more talkative, a little more interested in what they saw and wanted to transfer that to people back here,
Chuck, we got
do you think that the reason, one reason perhaps, that they were more talkative was that they were feeling better?
Absolutely. And I think that...
Could you go into that?
Well, I only have my subjective opinions based on their voice communications. Of course, our physiological data has remained normal at all times throughout the mission. So the only clues I would have are those of voice quality and knowing the men and knowing their personalities. And I think it was quite obvious today that everybody was in great spirits and doing a tremendous job.
Okay, have we got anyone that's got a deadline problem?
Doug, I have a deadline. Just one more question. Okay. I'm sorry. There's a report that there's a 10 to 15% chance of a solar flare in the next 3 days. And I was wondering if anybody could comment on that, whether they've heard that, whether... forgetting that you might have heard it or not, is this very possible? A 10 to 15% chance of rain, I know, is usually
like
means that it rains.
Yes, but let me point out that we're not worried about the worst solar flare that has ever been recorded. It's still not of a magnitude that bothers us in the command module. Not only that, but in lunar orbit, they're in better shape because they're protected half the time. They're blocked out. The number you quote is probably some average number, frankly, it sounds like.
Space meteorology.
Has the crew caught up with the sleep it lost earlier in the mission yet? And are all three sleeping at the moment?
The three crewmen were resting at the time I left the Mission Control Center. I don't know until they report to us whether they actually were sleeping, but they were maintaining radio silence, and we had planned that in order to give this crew some more time to catch up. The answer to your question is no, they have not caught up on the amount of sleep we would like to have seen them had to this point in the mission.
How much sleep are they going to get during the lunar orbits?
That would only be speculation on my part, but with the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity here, I imagine the crew will not sleep during those 20 hours. I certainly wouldn't.
Don't believe I would either.
Let's come back over here and get this one.
I'm sorry I couldn't answer your question better.
Milt, could you give us some times for LOS and AOS on the first rev?
I thought you'd never ask. You should have said that earlier. I'm sorry. LOS is at 6836. And you'll recall I said the maneuver itself is at 6908. And then AOS, assuming that we do execute the maneuver, although it wouldn't change too much, is 6930 is the prediction that we had when I left the control center. Of course, they'll update that, but I don't think it'll change a great deal. Okay.
There, just wait till we get the mic back.
LOS is 6836 and AOS is 6930. And the maneuver is at 6908, some 22 minutes before AOS.
Okay, that's good. Let's
look at that picture. How much would it change that AOS if they do not do the burn, if any?
It'll make it earlier by, I'd guess, a couple of minutes. That's what we've seen in the simulations. And I didn't get that number before. Am I talking?
Yeah.
Is it coming through? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm talking all right. it would be like a couple of minutes early.
Okay, and could you talk a little bit about the trade-offs that are involved in the two options for dealing with the window fogging situation?
Two options in the what, please?
Window fogging.
For dealing with the window fogging.
Well, essentially the trade-offs, as we see them here on the ground, and you recognize, of course, the crew has been in a better position to evaluate them. The one that we recommend essentially gets all of our test objectives. It has Anders doing the photography, which he's been practicing. It has Lovell doing the landmark familiarization work. And remember now that I'm referring primarily to the second rev. This is the one just prior to the TV pass, when they're on the backside, just prior to the TV pass. And the disadvantage of that one is it does require a 180-degree maneuver, roughly, on the spacecraft, since before they were looking out of the windows, and now they'll be using the lower equipment bay with the optics, which is essentially on the opposite side of the spacecraft below their feet. The other option, which, okay.
Okay, Lovell will be using the optics. What will Anders be using for?
Well, in the one that we like, he would be doing the photography as planned.
Yes, but through what window? Or through what optics, or what?
Through the best of the two windows on his side, which are the two windows he's already planning to use. Now, the center window is the one that's opaque, and they never plan to take pictures from that at all. So we'll use the same windows. It does involve changing some of the things that he takes pictures of. He'll be looking north instead of south, or vice versa. I forget which way it is, with some different lighting, and we've worked out the different lens settings, etc., if he should choose to do this. Now, the other option would essentially put Anders in the center seat and Lovell in Anders' seat, and then Lovell would look through the windows on the right-hand side, the rendezvous in the other window, and do his familiarization through the window. And the disadvantage to this is that Lovell then would have to do any photography on that particular rev. Anders would essentially be out of participating in that rev. There would still be some small attitude changes, but probably not quite as many. And so that has, perhaps, if you kind of added up the red pencil changes in the flight plan, there are fewer of those for that option than for the first one, which is really the one that we kind of would like to see on the ground. I guess it's not, we don't feel strongly either way. We just asked the people to look at it and tell us what they thought, and they said, well, this is the one that we think is perhaps the best, but we're not going to press either one of them on the crew at all. In fact, we talked to them and told them this, and we left it at that. We didn't even tell them about the flight plan changes in any detail. We'll have those ready, though, when we need them.
Yeah, let's get this one right.
For guidance purposes, if nothing else, could you tell us roughly where the TV pass will cover? In other words, they'll start at 6 degrees south, go up 6 degrees north or 12 degrees south, cover from XYZ longitude east to XYZ longitude west?
Okay, let me express it this way and see if we come up over the lunar horizon with respect to the Earth and see the Earth rise, it's our intention to be trained on the camera trained on the horizon at that time. Now you recognize, of course, that we have to have the high gain antenna pointed at the Earth. We have to do the acquisition procedures, etc. And it makes it just a little bit more difficult. We lose a little bit of time. We hope not very much. So we hope that as we come up over the lunar horizon there, and we'll see the Earth rise, and we'll take for around 10 minutes or 15 long in that time period, general targets of opportunity. But it'll be during that part of the lunar landscape. It'll be the part that we can see from the Earth, of course, probably the first third, I'd say, of the full moon as we come up on it. Is that the kind of...
You don't have any guess as to whether you'll be coming up from, say, 6 or 12 degrees south latitude, heading towards north, where you disappear between longitude this and longitude that. So at least we can study the damn maps and see what we know at
least.
Well,
don't they have a ground track map of the lunar surface?
Yeah, we've got the...
I have the ground track, but I don't have it on the TV pass.
Well, the TV pass is the second rev.
I think the ground track is rev 1 and rev 10.
Okay, but in between, they change very little. The moon doesn't rotate, so the reason they didn't put them all is they're all the same. They just would...
Well, that's what I want to know.
Okay, and I think it starts right at pretty close to 90 degrees then, and it goes from south to north right at that point, I believe, doesn't it? But you've got the map. You've looked at it probably later than I have.
Let's get this one right here.
A couple of questions. One for Dr. Ziegler-Smith. If the crew was feeling so rosy, how come Anders was taking Merazine today?
Anders did not take Merazine today. We got some clarification today as to whether Merazine was taken earlier in the mission, at 28 hours, 20 minutes into the mission. Both Jim Lovell and Bill Anders took one Merazine tablet. We had prescribed that at their option, and we did not know whether they had taken that or not, and we learned today that they had during a crew status report.
That was this morning?
This was this morning on the first shift.
The notation in the transcript is that at the same
time
and
that
both
is an
took
error.
The Lomatil.
Right, I.
That was an error.
It's an error in the transcript that I think this transcript only says that I forget which one of the two crewmen took Merazine.
Anders.
But Lovell also took it.
So they both took it.
That's right.
As a prophylactic measure.
No, because they felt nauseated at that time, 28 hours and 20 minutes into the mission.
Oh, that's referring then back to 28 hours.
That's right.
This report came through at about 58 hours.
That's correct. That's was the time gap there. But no, we have had no symptoms whatsoever. This was just bringing the medical people up to date.
Okay, and a question for Milt. The TV passes for Christmas are still at 8:31 p.m. and is it 2:30 in the afternoon?
They haven't changed. If that's the schedule you've been given, that's when they'll be.
And that would be the second and what rev?
Ninth.
Second and ninth.
To be, yes.
And one other question. The LOS AOS times again. Could you just go through that? We went through them twice. I'll try.
Okay. LOS 6836. AOS 6930.
Go back here and get this one.
Read back, LOA. Oh, it's roughly about 1 hour and 15 minutes, 10 or 15 minutes, something like that.
Going back to the ground track map, as near as I can make out, the flight path takes it over, the most commonly known features, the flight path passes over the Sea of Tranquility, the Sea of Vapors, and the Crater Copernicus. Would we get TV views of those features?
Some of those sound like they're too far around. I don't.
Not according to. Well, I've looked at the map and
okay,
they appear to pass right over it. over those features.
Okay, you're talking about further on around in the rev later on that it's in earthshine, darkness.
Well, I'm not sure where it will be, but the flight path says they go over these features. I think they're all on the side facing the earth.
Oh, yes, it faces the earth, all right, but the Terminator is in about at the middle, I believe, some pretty close to the middle, a little bit past the middle.
I'll recheck that.
Okay. If you got a map with you, we can run over where it is, but I didn't bring one with me, but I guess I should have now.
About 2 hours ago, I believe I heard communication up to the spacecraft, somebody asking if he could take something, and the answer was yes, but the surgeon says to make it a small one. Now, what was this in reference to?
That was in reference to a query by the commander as to whether the lunar module pilot, Bill Anders, had permission to take a sleeping pill, 50 milligrams of sodium secanol. We have two doses aboard, 150 milligrams and 100, because there was only about 5 to 6 hours remaining before the burns. I thought the smaller dosage would be indicated.
Milt, early in the evening, about 60:30 into the flight, in conjunction with an IMU realignment, there was a gimbal lock warning light and a problem locating a couple of stars, and it wasn't clear whether that was a problem that was solved or whether that's a latent problem that might still exist in the gear. Could you clarify that, please?
It wasn't real clear to me, to tell you the truth. Apparently, though, the so-called gimbal lock problem, when we went looked at the refs mats, and they were 70 degrees apart, which is the gimbal warning limit for gimbal lock. And when we set up in the automatic system to go from one refs mat to the other, it saw it was 70 degrees, and like it's supposed to do, it flashed the warning that it was. And you can manually get around this by just not following the pre-programmed way, which is what he did. So that was the thing I think that we could have helped him with on the ground was we could have given him perhaps a little angle deviation there without him having to kind of trial and error. But the guys tell me, Grand Paulus that perhaps you met last night was telling me that probably a trial and error process is the best way to get around that. But we're going to look at helping him the next refs mat change, which happens after TEI. Now, the problem with the stars, the way I understand the computer, some years ago, they went through a big program to set up what they call Apollo stars, and they plugged in some constraints on what stars could be used, and these constraints were not very severe. And the big computer program, which is set up by people, spit out a bunch of stars. And when you go to this thing that they call pick a pair, this routine, it comes up with a couple of stars, which are not always the best stars available. It just apparently grabs a couple at random, or I don't know how it selects them, really. But you can do it again, and it comes up with other ones. And that's what he was doing there, and we were telling him also that if that didn't work, why, here's a couple more. And he was looking out the window and saying, here's a star that I see. And he actually aligned it by going through this, by selecting some other stars, which is all right, as long as he punches in the star numbers, and they are, you know, in the computer memory, which a whole host of them are. But it just happened that the couple that it came up with the first time were not the ones that he could identify readily. And we discussed on the problems he's had identifying the constellations, the weak stars, and so forth.
As far as the gimbal lock problem, then you don't really know whether that's been solved or not.
Well, it's not a case of solving it. It's been with us all along. 70. We can't let ourselves get into gimbal lock, or at least it takes a while to recover from it. You got to set back up again. So that was a real situation where the two refs mats happened to be beyond that. But it's not something that you can't work around by manual procedures.
So there's no real concern about that, then?
No. The only concern is that I think that we on the ground could have an answer ready for him. You recall he asked us to give him some angles to go to avoid this, and by the time we got him some angles, he had already avoided it himself. And people tell me that, okay, that's probably the best way anyway, but I'd like to see us do a little bit better than that and be ready to tell him. I don't like it when the flying ECOM ties us with the answer there. I think we ought to be ahead of them. But they are very, very sharp on all the procedures. The people, well, the ground people are too, really. Everybody is, amazes me. A lot of people are doing good work on this flight. Thousands.
We got a note here that we gave 6836 for LOS and the clock that's showing for 6856.
Well, I don't know what the LOS clock is. Um, 6856 is a flight plan number. The plan, the number that I get off of the computer program is 6836. So what I like to think is that my number is a better number, but I can check into that.
We can clarify.
But
that
6856 is a, it was an earlier flight plan number, which the LOS programs that they have to do are not that completely accurate. And we're approaching the moon, actually. All the diagrams, you know, show us coming pretty close to it, but we are really screaming in at a pretty high relative angle. It's not like that big, long thing would show you, you know, coming right in on it.
Can we get the totals on the crew rest time, sleep time so far?
You mean the total amounts to date?
Yes.
I don't know what he's going to say, but we don't really know that.
These are only estimates on the part of the crew, and of course, if you realize, it's pretty hard to estimate exactly how much sleep you have because we have no objective measurements of this. All I can say right now is that we're the command module pilot and the lunar module pilot have about half of that, which we'd like to have seen them, and the commander's a little bit better than that. He's about 80% of what we'd like to have seen him had at this point in the mission. But we have sleep yet to account for this evening, which the black team will get.
PMP and LMP had half of what you'd like to see?
On the first 2 days of the mission. Okay. We're in the third day now, so they may improve that percentage. But I must emphasize, this is only an estimate. Approximately.
This will be a quick one. If there's been an explanation, just tell me and I'll look it up. Has there been an explanation for the long lens working today when it didn't yesterday?
Yes, there has been an explanation.
I hadn't heard it.
What? The long range lens. Yeah.
Back to this LOS, AOS thing. Some rough subtraction gives it from LOS to LOI-1 would be 32 minutes. From LOI-1 to AOS, 22 minutes. Does that sound like right intervals? You're coming in a
Does that sound like what?
The correct intervals, you're coming in at a pretty high velocity, and it takes a longer time to get from LOS to LOI than it does to get from LOI back out.
No, that's a function of when we want to execute the maneuver, which is, you know, programmed to give us this 60 by 170, and if we delay it a little bit, then we go further past LOS, rather, before we advance it some. And I'll check that number for you. I know you want to know that. I'll try to verify that somehow to the control center here. But I could have written it down wrong.
Let's come back up here.
We should know it by now. That's true.
This refers to the same thing. Normally, the break in communications as they're orbiting the moon should be about 45 minutes. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's about right.
This break in communications, which you're giving for LOS to AOS, is 54 minutes. And we were told last night, I thought, that on this first backside pass, because they were moving so much faster for the first half of it, that this LOS ought to be shorter than the ones on subsequent revolutions.
That's true too.
Well, now we've got one that's 9 minutes longer than they will be on subsequent revolutions.
You may have me. Maybe the 56 number is right. That's the LOI burn time. Don't believe I wrote that one down wrong.
Do you have the answer to that first question yet on MPH?
Yes, if you're willing to take rounded off numbers. Figure that I had before we came over here for the velocity at the time the LOI maneuver is performed is about 8,400 feet per second. And my figure shows that to be about 5,712 miles an hour. The maneuver is about 2,990 feet per second, and I rounded that off to 3,000. And that comes out to about 2,040 miles an hour that they slow down. And the speed after the maneuver is about 5,400 feet per second, which is about 3,672 miles an hour. And those are approximate. About 3,672. Does that look right to you?
Man, I don't deal in miles.
Well, feet per second.
Yeah. Yes. You're asking, does the velocity change from the first two revs when we went 60 by 170 and 60 circular? Yes. I don't.
Yeah, you can get miles per hour out of that just by multiplying 0.68 times the feet per second figure.
And in the transcript earlier, you gave for those figures, I don't know who did it, but PAO gave 5740 and 3740 as the velocities, which if you dropped off the 1.8, I don't know would make that difference or not.
Well, I'm not quite sure we're talking about the same numbers.
Well, the velocity at the point of LOI and the velocity after the burn's finished.
Well, the velocity at the point of LOI, the last figure I had from the flight dynamics officer an hour or so before we came over here was about 8,400 feet per second. And as I said, I rounded the velocity of the maneuver off to about 3,000 feet per second.
Very brief question. Just two figures. How long does it take to go around the moon?
2 hours, essentially.
2 hours. And how long is the no communications break there?
It's in the order of 45, 50 minutes.
Thank you.
Somewhat less than half.
Let's come up here in front and get one more question, then I'd like to wrap this up if we could. Right here.
Doctor, would you discuss this earlier comment about the percentage of the sleep from a standpoint of fatigue and despite the excitement probably being generated by going around the moon, are you advocating any medication to keep the crew even more alert or to this effect? And then what might this do after you once leave the moon on the way back from a standpoint of their alertness or fatigue factors? What are you thinking about in this respect?
Well, we're going to have to obviously evaluate that after the TEI burn, and we'll certainly, one of the factors will be the crew input, how they feel and report to us, and we'll handle that at that time. But there are certain things we might be able to do for them, such as make the flight plan a little cleaner so we don't have to perhaps do all the activities that are programmed. That's one option. The other is to use a stimulant if necessary, but I doubt that that will be necessary. But we'll have to evaluate that. It's too soon to tell that now. After all, it's the first time we're doing this.
Could I briefly ask, can you discuss briefly from a medical standpoint, can you give a stimulant that will give you a relatively short-term reaction that you can turn off, so to speak, with another medication or...
Yeah, you can do all those things, but we don't like to do that. So I think what we'll ideally do is to try to get more sleep by natural means without inducing it. Okay.
How long is the LOI burn? 4 minutes and 2 seconds, that last check. Oh, LOI-2 is quite a bit shorter. It's only a couple hundred feet a second or whatever. It's it'd just be a real brief time. I don't have the exact number, but it's... Oh, yes.
Thank you very much. And if some of you wanted to come up here and get oriented on this picture, we
can
pull that with you up here.
We're about halfway in between those two pictures up there, it looks like. But anyway, I've got it.